Good evening, planet Earth. Good evening, planet Earth. It could even be morning, wherever you are. Good evening to the people of New York City and Denver, Colorado. Good evening to the people that live in Miami, Florida, and to the island people of the Far East. It is the Planetary Status Report with your friend Dan. And according to the Reddit, a few Reddit comments I've read about this show on as it appears on shortwave, I have been compared to the new Brother Scare. I don't know anything about Brother Scare, but it does seem like an insult, doesn't it, friends? I'm the new Brother Scare. Do I scare you, children of Reddit? Yeah, I probably scare you with my keyboarding and my crappy attitude, but it is approximately, well, actually, it's almost midnight on Tuesday, April the, I cannot believe it, it's April the 6th, 2021. Yes, it is. It's almost midnight here in the Mountain Standard Time of Utah, almost midnight in Utah on Tuesday, April the 6th, 2021. But if you're listening to me on shortwave, it might be just after 3 a.m. UTC. And the show will be for about 60 minutes. And if you don't want to listen to the show, there's this thing called electricity. In fact, it's called electricity. You just turn off your device, crazy, right? You just turn it off, man. If you don't like it, you just turn off the radio, man. And then you don't have to hear it. But if you do want to hear, you might be listening to WRMI out of Miami on 5950 kilohertz. That's 5950 kilohertz. And of course, this is shortwave. And again, this show could air on either Saturday or Sunday night. But depending upon where you are, that could be Sunday or Monday morning, couldn't it? If we're getting realistic about the nature of time on an orb that spins in deep space. The notes for this show are at dfgtc.org/shownotes, or if you're just listening to this off the web, the notes are in whatever podcast format you're listening to. Could be SoundCloud, could be YouTube. Yeah, you could be just grabbing it off, you know, raw MP3 file from dfgtc.org/mp3. They're out there. They're technically available to download. Donations are appreciated. They are. And my donation link, if you like the shortwave show or the podcast, is paypal.com/paypalme/Dr. Freckles, fully spelled out. All lowercase or probably casing, doesn't matter. Lowercase, uppercase, does it really matter, my friends? Does it matter on an orb that spins in space? If you're interested in other information or interested in some of the stuff I do on the side, you can go to igloo-luau.com. Igloo-luau.com, that's like a little ice shed that you sleep in. That's like a barbecue you have in Tahiti. IgluLuau.com. I've got some stuff out there, and so does my good friend Jim. We all got a good friend Jim, don't we? Yes, out there in the cybersphere, on a spinning globe, drifting through space. On a spinning orb in space, drifting through the emptiness of all space. But this is the planetary status report, and I'll tell you something. I probably shouldn't read Reddit, because if I am the new Brother Scare, I think that's scary. Brother Scare, I don't know much about him. I'd hear his crackly voice, but my guess is there's tape recordings, because he's like Christian Slater. Pump up the volume, just grab the box of cassettes in the back of Brother Scare's shack after you take out the body to bury him someplace, right? Am I the new Brother Scare? Do I frighten the people of the village? Brother Scare. Yeah, I don't know, guys, but let's go to our first topic of the planetary status report. Here's a quote from Dr. Freckles. Most people go to art school in order to learn to speak rich person, but it doesn't actually help you get rich. That's a quote from Dr. Freckles. What does that mean? Well, actually, I don't think I should beat up on art people. I'm actually a big fan of artists. I guess I'm kind of a sort of a jaded, messed up artist myself in some ways. So I don't want to beat up on art people. But I think the point of the quote isn't so much about art school as it is about the nature of reality. That you have to take care of certain things first. You do have to solve certain problems before you can even really enjoy art. Art is not something you find to any great degree unless you have the resources and time to take advantage of it. Now, you do find art everywhere, it is true. If you study anthropology, cultural anthropology, and let me drink a little coffee here. If you study, like, you know, cultural anthropology, and I just spilled coffee on my keyboard, which now means I am destroyed. I am destroyed because my keyboard is imbrungulated. By spilling coffee on it, I've caused a crisis of scale 3 and 4 within the domain range of sarcasm and sarcastitude, and this is sad. Spilling coffee on my keyboard, needless to say, this isn't about being an art student. It was just more of a thought on what is practical given the circumstance. Like, if you were to come up to somebody... Let me rephrase that. If some young person came up to you in 2021, what would you tell them to study? Like, what advice would you give them in terms of research? I don't want to get into, like, whether they should go to a university or not. I kind of think that's a bad idea. But what topics would you recommend? Would you recommend they study medicine? Maybe. I think that the system has become so crooked that a lot of people are probably going to just, you know, search for their own neighborhood nurses and doctors for a lot of things. So studying medicine might actually make sense as long as your goal is to do it outside the system. That's what I would advise. I also think it makes sense to understand how to, you know, grow food and gather the resources to survive, like knowing how to purify water, for example, because it's not just enough to get water. You have to purify the water. You have to clean it. If you drink dirty water, you're going to die, art student. That's right, art student. If you drink the filthy, fetid water, you will get a parasite and die. I don't care that you feel like you're just as good as Andy Warhol. You might be the reincarnation of Andy Warhol. You might be like Jackson Pollock or some type of impressionist. Or neo-impressionist. Or neoclassicist, sarcastic, impressionist Jasper John. You could be a neo-impressionist Jasper John, but don't drink the dirty water, okay? And we all need to know how to get food, and food is not something that just appears. You can forage for it, which means you can identify nuts and other things in the woods, nuts, plants, roots, you name it. Mushrooms, obviously, although even mushrooms that aren't poisonous are still not necessarily going to give you tons of calories, but yes, there are a number of things you can forage for in the forest, a healthy forest, to keep you alive. Cattails, for example, you know, the cattails that grow. The stuff inside of the root of the cattails, I believe you can eat that. That's actually nutritious. The point is, if someone were to ask me, what should I study in 2021, I'd probably say food, water, shelter topics. And then after that, study medicine. Because for the next few years, people are going to need help. I don't really believe what I'm being told about the current state of reality. I don't. I am excited about being here in Utah. I'm excited about other things. I have a little bit of good news before I move on. One art student to all of you. I might be starting a project soon that can pay for my food, water, and shelter. I might be starting a project soon that will give me some extra resources for a while. And that does make me happy. I mean, that's an optimistic good thing to have a little extra money, right? But I don't really know what it means beyond that. And if you want to ask, do I want to be Brother Scare, the art student? Brother Scare, the art student, you know, why'd you go to art school? I'm kidding. He's not an art student. He wasn't, whatever. The point is, do I want to be the Brother Scare? No. I would just assume at this point, do a slightly different thing than a lot of other people are doing. And that is just ignore these psyops, ignore these psychological operations. It's clear that we're in the midst of one. It's clear we are right in the midst of a gigantic psychological operation. And I don't know why, and you don't know why either. In fact, if you were to email me, and you can email me if you want to, me@iamsully.com, and if you're just tuning in, this is the Planetary Status Report with your friend Dan on WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee, the great Okeechobee, where the beast rises from the swamp to take over all of Florida, except for Jacksonville. Yeah, I'm a little bit scatterbrained on this one, but before we move on to the next topic, I have good news. I have things that are, I would consider good news. I think I'm making some new friends. I think I haven't had so many friends in my life, and there are probably listeners out there who can understand. I don't have so many friends at the age of 51 that I can afford to just, you know, not have more. So it's good. I'm making some new friends, and that is a good thing. And I am regaining some faith in the idea that I might actually survive a bit longer. Living in Seattle, I was more or less in the mode of thinking that there was no way I could fit into that world. There was no way I was going to go do another contract at Microsoft, and it was unlikely that they were that dumb. I mean, you have to understand, for the last 10 years, when I haven't been working for Microsoft, I have been basically telling off their recruiters or the contract recruiters. I've been telling them terrible things, things I cannot say on the radio. And yet they keep calling, my friends, and so I have escaped that hellhole, that commie New World Order upside down hellhole, but I'd like to leave that there. I'd like to leave that there because I don't know what is really going on, other than we are in the midst of the biggest psychological operation in human history. I believe some of you think we're heading towards the New World Order reset, and maybe that's true, but I kind of think we've already had the New World Order. I think after World War I, we have had it. We've had a global government, we've had global power, we have had global control. And I don't mean you, my friend, and I don't mean me. I mean the people that run this wretched banker empire. And also, this is not directed at Jewish people. I'm so tired of people mixing up bank with some specific ethnicity or specific religious perspective. I'm talking about banks. Guess what? Good old-fashioned Christians can work for banks too. But this wretched central bank empire, it's been around a while, my friends. It didn't just show up. So when people say to me, we're going to head towards the new world order or whatever that means, well, what does that mean given where we've been? Given that this really strange dystopia was born from that quote-unquote freer world, my friends. Okay, 2020 didn't just magic itself out of nowhere. It wasn't pooped, you know, on the earth by aliens. It wasn't exuded or excreted from the vampire armies of Sector 21. Even though they're dangerous and sexy. No, 2020 came from the system. 2020 came from the universities. 2020 came from the public education. 2020 did not just appear. It was a product of reality. So when people say things like we might be headed towards a reset, I have no idea what that means. The only thing I could say is it would be the same but worse. And what we had was bad enough. So no, I don't know what is really going on. I don't know if it's the reset. I don't know if it's some sort of massive culling, which is terrible. If that's the case, it's terrible and monstrous. I don't know if people will wise up. A lot of you folks out there listening to me, you probably believe a lot of the crap you've been told about the COVID-19, the Rona. What I am telling you is whatever you think you know, you probably don't know anything. And as far as the vaccine goes, if they're telling you you need to have a vaccine every month for the rest of your life, that vaccine is also not what they're telling you. It isn't. It's something else. It sounds a lot like gene therapy. Next topic, a quote from Dr. Freckles. Toolkits and APIs over frameworks. Toolkits and APIs over frameworks. Toolkits and APIs, that's application programming interfaces, over frameworks. Frameworks are commie crapola, according to Dr. Freckles. Okay, so what does that mean? So if you're a programmer or software engineer, or not, I'm going to explain. A toolkit is essentially, it's kind of like a package of individual computer programs. Often you have to configure them, but you don't always have to. Sometimes they just operate once you download them. And it can be one executable, but often it's a whole bunch of executables. If you've ever used GIMP, and that's the free graphical sort of design software, the free, you know, drawing software. If you've used Adobe Photoshop, think free Adobe, that more or less, and that's GIMP. But GIMP is really just a thin layer that sits upon a toolkit of little C programs, and that's the computer language C, little image processing programs that have been developed over the last 40 years, really, the last four decades. So even though GIMP is relatively new in the last few decades, last 10 years or so, the actual algorithms for manipulating images have been around for a long, long time. In fact, I used to own a book that was basically a recipe book for writing C programs to manipulate images. Because hey, back in the 70s or 80s, when Unix was young, the world flowed with the C programmer and the guy that could edit the image using C. So toolkits are basically what they sound like. APIs are similar to toolkits, but they're not the same thing. An application programming interface is a defined set of behaviors for something that you can access. For example, I don't know, what's a good example of a utility? Well, for example, there are utilities that you run in Unix that have a defined set of inputs and behaviors. There are services that will have defined sets of inputs and behaviors. You can think of an API in some ways like going to an a la carte buffet. The API should be organized, you know, thematically in the sense that you don't go to the a la carte buffet. You don't go to the a la carte buffet. You don't go to the buffet if you want to go to the strip club. Okay, you don't go to the buffet if you want to go to the strip club. Strip club's like a toolkit, kidding. But no, if you want to go to the buffet, okay, you go there. Needless to say, an API is like a buffet or a cafeteria. It's all a la carte. You pick and choose what you want to use. You ignore what you don't want to. So ultimately, it's similar to a toolkit, and often APIs and toolkits live in the same world. But what they both have in common is it's up to you to use the behaviors. The behaviors are not being forced on you. Now let's talk about frameworks. Like Entity Framework, for example. Entity Framework that's been around to torture people for like 15, you know, maybe 12, 13 years. But Dan, you're supposed to do Entity Framework because it abstracts out. You know what it abstracts out? Your requirement to understand how to access data efficiently, which means that you can write really terrible code with Entity Framework. But the point is, Entity Framework is a good example of a framework, and with frameworks, you got to fit into the pod. You know how they talk about pods and eating bugs? Well, frameworks are a lot like that. They're about, you know, eating bugs and living in a little tiny cell, or, you know, kind of like in a mausoleum, waiting to die. And some people say, well, Dan, Entity Framework saved me so much time. It saved you time now. You ran some wizard, you ran some scripts, you applied it to a database. And for those listeners who don't understand databases or software engineering, that's okay. These are things that you can research when you have time and want to have really boring fun. You should be wanting to have sex with a stripper, but you can do this instead. Frameworks argue that they put you into a correct mode in terms of some set of behaviors. So basically, a framework is saying you need to behave this way if you want to take advantage of what I can provide. But in reality, it becomes a really, really shoddy kind of rapid programming. And what you end up with is a lot of code debt. And code debt is kind of what it sounds like. It's debt, but it's work debt. It's stuff you have to go back and rework. If you're a carpenter, let's say you're a carpenter and you work with wood. Code debt is where you screw it up and you have to do it all over again. But the problem is with code debt is you can hide it. You can hide code debt. If you screw up the hinge on the door, or if you screw up the window pane, or if you screw up the brand new cedar shingles, people are gonna see that shit, buddy. But code debt, you can hide that shit. Redmond, Washington, Microsoft Redmond, they sit on the Mount Everest of code debt, my friends. And they love frameworks. Yeah, Redmond loves frameworks. Now let's go a little bit off topic on the issue of frameworks. I don't know if any of you drive Uber or Lyft. When Uber and Lyft first came into existence, I immediately turned my stink eye at it. Not because I don't want people to make money, and I totally believe in free enterprise. Although every statement we make should be ended with "on the Death Star." Because whatever free enterprise we have is surrounded by a police state, which basically looks like a giant Death Star in an abstract sense. You know what? Make money, hustle however you want to. But when Lyft and Uber first showed up, The first thought I had was, well, holy crap, this is how they're going to data mine. This is how they're going to build out their heuristics engine. This is how they're going to produce a heuristics engine that prevents cars from basically killing people. You know, you do this for 5 years, you monitor where they go, what they do. You have GPS information, you have textual information. You have a lot of information from Uber and Lyft. Uber and Lyft were data mining drivers. That was always the point. If you think the point was to give you some side gig you'd be doing in 2033 when there are flying cars, you are crazy. You're crazy. No, the point of Uber and Lyft was to data mine you, buddy. To data mine your driving habits, to data mine your behaviors, to data mine your perspective, to data mine you. To figure out what's going on inside of you, my friend. That's the point. So, what does that have to do with frameworks? Well, here's the deal. Frameworks force programmers into a specific kind of metaphor. And by doing that, frameworks allow artificial intelligence to kind of learn stuff easier. Like if you put stuff in frameworks, ultimately you're placing stuff in terms of context in a more semantic and logical arrangement. So a computer could come along later and analyze the framework and look at how you used it, and that computer could actually learn. So if you were to ask me what I think of frameworks, and frankly, I would add to the list things like design patterns and definitely add a lot of the agile crap. If you were to ask me what is the purpose of all this, well, there's two things. One, the destruction of native engineering capability, which has been going on in the United States for a few decades. They've been destroying, well, the public schools are crap. Kids don't learn the math and the logic. Colleges are indoctrination camps. People aren't learning software engineering. They're learning indoctrination. So they are destroying it that way, but they're also destroying it by forcing on us essentially really, really terrible project management styles and just teamwork styles that go nowhere. But they do produce code debt, which means they produce break-fix work. And I'll tell you something about wretched neo-Stalinist Death Star economies. They do a lot with just busting up windows. You know how Bastiat said, you want a job, son? Break that window? No, he never said that, did he? He actually said that you might think somebody gets a job from that, but that's a lie. You're not seeing the things that are hidden. You're not seeing the investments that are postponed. You're not seeing the rework or the essential cost to that baker or that clockmaker or whoever. You decided to bust out their window because you want the glass maker to have a job. But on the Death Star, that's pretty much how the economy works. You go around, bust out windows, somebody gets a job. You know, nothing is really built to work on the Death Star. If it was built to work, there would be no jobs. So yeah, this long rant about frameworks, toolkits, and APIs is also related to this project I'm going to start. And I would much rather produce toolkits and APIs over frameworks. Toolkits and APIs give people choices. Essentially, building a toolkit or an API is like, you know, producing a restaurant or a cafeteria or essentially a nice little store people can go to and buy stuff. But frameworks are more like prison camps. And when your framework acts up on you, and I can tell you, when it comes to version control with entity framework in the past, it would act up on you all the time. That's when you really know you're in the prison. But Dan, it code-genned all my SQL code. Well, yeah, I know. But do you think it should have? And maybe you should understand how to write SQL code. And if you don't understand, listener, what SQL is, that's structured query language. That is a standard language for interacting with relational databases. SQL. Which, it turns out, is one of the reasons why people use entity framework in the software world. It is a cheat. It is a cheap way of putting together data access without a lot of effort. So there you go. Next topic. Next topic, clean exit 2021. What do I mean by that? Clean exit 2021. And if you just tuned in, this is the Planetary Status Report from WRMI in Miami, if you're listening on the radio, on frequency 5950 kilohertz. We are on Saturday and Sunday night, starting at 3 a.m. UTC. Next topic. Clean Exit 2021. So, I'm thinking of growing a beard. I'm thinking of growing a beard like Brigham Young. If you see those paintings of Brigham Young in Salt Lake City, he is majestic and standing before the groups of people making their way to Utah. They made their way to Utah with Brigham Young, and I don't know if he had one wife or 50, but he was a handsome man, wasn't he? Brigham Young taking his people to the promised land. You know what? They call him the American Moses. So I'm going to grow a beard to look just like Brigham Young. And then I'm going to dress up like Brigham Young for Halloween this year, if there is a Halloween, right? Kidding, right? Kidding, don't know. I will dress up like Brigham Young for Halloween. I will walk the streets of Salt Lake City. I will tell stories of a time when the young people of the ancient world would sift the sands or bits of something to build into something. Maybe, I don't know what it is. Yes, I'll walk around like Brigham Young. I will probably give little ad hoc sermons to winos and prostitutes. Are there prostitutes in Salt Lake City? Are there prostitutes in Salt Lake City? That's right, my friends. I'm going to grow a beard like Brigham Young for Halloween. I'm going to dress like Brigham Young, and I'm going to wander the streets of Salt Lake City, almost like some pseudo-modern version of what? Who's that guy I'm thinking of, the founder of cynicism? Diogenes? Imagine me as a kind of Diogenes. Pretend that Salt Lake City is the Athens of Utah. Like a Diogenes / Brigham Young looking freak, I'll wander the streets of Salt Lake City, Utah on Halloween. One of the elders, no, probably two missionaries will recognize me, and they'll point and they'll scream their infernal scream. All the people of Salt Lake City will walk out of their homes immediately. The lights will be turned on. The alarm at City Hall will be pressed. The alarm that notifies that either somebody looking like Brigham Young or Brigham Young just arrived in Salt Lake City again. And if it isn't Brigham Young, then it's a faker. It's a joker. It's somebody with a crude sense of humor, that crazy man dressed like Brigham Young. What do we do now, brothers and sisters, my friends? There are no hookers in Utah. There are no hookers in Utah. Once I'm arrested, and this will be on October the 31st, 2021, once I am arrested, I will be taken to City Hall in Salt Lake City. The Committee of 18 Ancient Aware Elders and the General Ceremony of the Sideways Freaks of Sector 92, they will convene a meeting, a kind of a star chamber, 25 levels below City Hall. In that star chamber, I will be tied to a metal plate. Electricity will be pumped through my testicles. All of this in honor of Utah. And this is my clean exit for 2021. Because after 17 hours of torture, they will take my body and they'll weigh it down. They will take my body out to the Great Salt Lake and they will sing their ancient Mormon songs to bring forth the beast. And they will feed the beast of the Great Salt Lake my terrible body, my body filled with poison and Chevron food. Food you buy at Chevron, right? I'm on the Chevron diet. I only buy food from Chevron gas stations. And only if it comes from a can. And the creature will dissolve my flesh, and I will become one with the Great Salt Lake creature. And then one day, in a moment of wrath and light and energy and smoke, one day when the thunderclap shatters the sky and the mountains are shaking, one day, like Brother Scare, I will arrive, but I will be part of that great beast. In fact, probably Brother Scare will be there with me too, my friends. Probably riding some type of horse made out of steel. And he will talk to you about what's coming and what's already happened. And that great beast will lay waste to Salt Lake City, and all because of my clean exit. 2021. Yeah, it's my clean exit 2021. Next topic. And you said, well, Dan, what were you just talking about? Well, I'm going to drink some coffee and think about it. I'm actually in a good place. I might grow a beard like Brigham Young, but I don't intend to dress up like him for Halloween. I don't really want to cause any problems with the Mormons. I don't even know if any Mormons would even listen to this podcast or broadcast off of WRMI. That's WRMI Miami, 5950 kilohertz. If you tuned in, this show starts at 3 a.m. UTC, Saturday and Sunday night. But think about that. So really, it's more like Sunday and Monday morning in a way, isn't it, if it's UTC? It's 11 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, 3 a.m. UTC, when this particular show should be on the radio. Anywho, next topic. But I'm not going to dress up like Brigham Young, and I'm not going to terrorize the good, kind people of Salt Lake City. No. So I was watching this movie, Dark Skies, and double check the time here. The movie Dark Skies is basically an alien flick. The aliens are bothering people, the Greys, and they steal kids. They abduct children. I would say before we go too far that I do think children are abducted, and I actually do think that techniques that look like alien abduction are probably used. I'm going to repeat that. I think children are abducted. I don't think it's aliens. I think that there are probably people that would like you to believe it's aliens, but it's probably not. It's probably demonic in nature, and ultimately it involves people making choices. And do I think that as psychological operations go, because really the alien thing is an ongoing psyop since the 40s, if you ask me. As psychological operations go, people are pretty much prepared to believe the idea that an alien could theoretically steal a kid. But the fact is, I think kids are abducted, and I think parents are led to believe that it's gray aliens. But in reality, it's probably just people that have a lot of good technology. A lot of technology that the military experiments with, especially for special forces and covert operations, a lot of that technology can be advanced. I mean, yes, the government's incompetent, but they do have a big checkbook called the Federal Reserve. And if you can spend enough money, you can usually get something that works. So, yeah, excuse me, I would say that probably our government and probably people that do abduct kids have the tech to make it seem as if aliens are taking your kid, but they're not aliens. They're crooked, disgusting, evil people. And yeah, that's pretty scary. There was a documentary series I'd watched based upon a book series. I think it's a book series called Missing 411, and I leave it to you to research the author and the series. But the premise of the series, or the point of the research of that series, Missing 411, was dealing with people that go to national parks and just go missing. They just disappear. And like with the alien thing, I think that this is also a situation where kids are abducted by folks, real human beings. I don't know what happens to them. I don't want to think about what happens to them. So anyways, Dark Skies is one of these alien shows, and the aliens are terrorizing the family. Much of the plot structure is sort of mixed between various movies. It actually has some of the feel of Spielberg's Poltergeist from 1980, I think 82 or 83. So Dark Skies feels like Poltergeist, but Poltergeist is about a ghost. In the case of Dark Skies, you're talking about gray aliens, super technology. They want to screw with us. They want to bother us. They want to gaslight us. But why? Because, you know, when you think about having the technology to travel between star systems, why would you want to fuck with people at that point? I mean, if you have super tech to travel faster than light, why would you want to screw with people? And I know I just let a dirty word go through. I've been told that I can probably do that once in a while. Hal Turner supposedly does it once in a while, but I'm not Hal Turner. I'm the new Brother Scare, right? Brother Dan, Brother Scare. If you're an alien and you have advanced technology, why? This is a simple question. I don't have the answer, but think on this. If you're an alien that has advanced technology, why would you terrorize people? I would say, number one, this whole implant thing, that's ridiculous. The aliens with that kind of technology probably can do things that you wouldn't be able to notice. So they wouldn't probably do implants, but if they did, you would not find them in all likelihood. You wouldn't. Okay? But my essential question is why? What would they learn? People will say things like, well, they're coming for our water. Friends, they're... if you believe what we're told about space at this point, probably much of interstellar space is filled with giant icebergs of water. Giant frozen chunks of water. There's probably a lot more water out there than you can imagine. Way more water than you know, that's on planet Earth. So if they're coming for the water, why? Why? Why can't they simply go get it someplace else? What's so special about our water? And if you were to say, well, they're coming for our people, why? They're advanced aliens. They know genetic engineering. Why would they have to have us or use us? Is the implication that there's a limit to technology? Because that would be the implication. If you think of this logically, if they're using us as a resource, that implies there's something they cannot do that they want to be able to do. But if I'm to believe that the crap that the technophobes, excuse me, not technophobes, the opposite, technophiles and techno-utopians tell me, If I'm to believe the crap of the techno-utopians, we can do almost everything and don't worry about the vaccine, it's an operating system, blah, 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 blah. And we're not, you know, traveling faster than light. And as far as high tech goes, high tech has been around basically since World War II. Okay, what we would classify as high technology, you know, computation that's electronic, jet engines, rocket engines, space travel, new composite materials, what we call high tech has been around for about 70 years, more or less. Okay, the technological era that we're in more or less began about 100 years ago. You can go back a bit further and you can talk steampunk, but for the most part, at the end of the 19th century, beginning of the 20th, many of the basics of what we still work with were basically, the foundation was laid from a science technology perspective about 100 years ago. Let's just say it that way. So these aliens are like, what, hundreds of years more advanced? I ask again, why would they need to use us? Why would they need to bother us? Why would they be interested in bothering us? It seems like a childish and a rather sociopathic thing to do. Is the implication that the smarter you get, the more sociopathic you get, that essentially you get excited by bothering people? Because that's the only thing. They're not coming for the water. They're not coming for your eggs or your sperm. Sorry, they're not. That would make zero sense. If they are, that does imply that technology has absolute limits and all that techno-utopian garbage is literally garbage. On the other hand, maybe they just enjoy messing with us. Maybe they enjoy being our brother scare from outer space. That could be. I don't really know. I just find it boggling, this whole thing about them wanting to insert probes into various orifices and stuff like that. Why? Why? They can do so many things if they have the technology to travel between stars. Why would they be inserting probes into our buttholes? Why? Anyways, next topic. This is a quote from Dr. Freckles. And you know, we're getting close to the end of the hour. This is a quote from Dr. Freckles. And so you know, all these notes are available if you're listening to this on the radio at dfgtc.org/show notes. That's Delta Foxtrot Golf Tango Charlie.org/show notes. Anyways, dfgtc/show notes. And if you're listening on the radio, you're probably listening to WRMI out of Miami, Okeechobee, 5950 kilohertz, sometime between 3 a.m. and 4 a.m. UTC, or 11 p.m. and midnight Eastern Standard Time on Saturday and Sunday night, and or Sunday, Monday morning if you're thinking UTC. You should be if you're on shortwave, right? Next topic. Next topic is another quote from Dr. Freckles. No one is born in Utah. Everyone ends up here. Yeah, everyone ends up here. No one is born in Utah. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this one. This one's kind of silly. This one is kind of silly, but it is strange. Utah's a strange place. It's very beautiful. I like the desert. And I haven't had a chance to go up into the mountains, but I hear that's, you know, beautiful too, or sublime, as Immanuel Kant might say, because according to Immanuel Kant, you know, humans can create things that are beautiful, but God creates things that are sublime. Oh my God, did the new Brother Scare say God? Well, we better post a Reddit comment. Kidding. No, kidding. Yeah, but according to Immanuel Kant, you know, the Lord in heaven creates things that are sublime, which is a level above just simple beauty. Humans can create beautiful things, but only God can create the sublime. Anywho, I haven't been to the mountains yet, but I hear they're good. I haven't been out to the Salt Lake. I've heard mystery stories about the Salt Lake, so I'm staying away from there. And I'm probably not going to go to SLC because I've heard stories about SLC. People go there, they don't come back. But they don't come back normal. There's something wrong with them. So you don't want to go to SLC. But other than that, I hear there's a lot of beauty, like Zion. It's a ways away. It's not nearby, but I've heard Zion is beautiful, so Yeah, but also people do end up here. People just end up here. Maybe that's the nature of the West. That's something about the West when you think about it. 100 or 200 years ago, this was all empty space and Native Americans mostly, maybe some traders. Maybe some traders, French traders, maybe some Spanish, Portuguese traders. The point is, this was a lot of empty space, a couple hundred years ago. There were some people, but not a lot of people. And there are more today, but there's still a lot of empty space. People just ended up here. They went along the trail, they followed Brigham Young in the case of the Mormons. But others just ended up here. Next topic, and probably close to our last topic. Emotion sickness. You guys know what motion sickness is. Motion sickness, where you get the vertigo kind of feeling. Sometimes it's vertigo and motion sickness together. They're not the same thing. But motion sickness is where you get sick to your stomach, you get that inner ear out of balance thing. Sometimes you need to, I don't know, what's that motion sickness thing they say take, whatever. Dramamine? Dramamine? Do they still give you Dramamine? That's for motion sickness. Seasickness? Motion sickness. But in the last few days, I've thought about something called emotion sickness. Okay, think emotion as in sad, happy, glad. Emotion sickness. And here's what I mean by that. I went to a pretty isolated place when I was in Seattle this last year. I'm not going to blame anyone else for that except for me. It was a hellhole. It was a dystopia. I think that Mayor Jenny Durkan, in a honest and decent rule of law world, would also be heading towards the Hague Court of Arbitration in chains, along with several other mayors and governors. But we don't live in a rule of law world, my friends. So Mayor Jenny Durkan of Seattle can continue to participate in the gaslight and the snake pit and be a completely wretched, terrible human being. And who knows, since the actual system doesn't function, she'll just be there until it doesn't function in a worse way. So I'm going to leave those people behind, right? But I will say that in the last few days, as I've kind of like dealt with what went on, I've felt this kind of weird feeling because I'm in a house with people. I have my own private room. I got my own space, but I'm in a house with people, normal people, people that have emotions, people that have happy, sad, glad, people that are friendly, people that are just ordinary, decent, good people. But there is, with all that, because it's a family, because there are kids around, there is that emotion that's there. And I have been kind of living in a closet. And so in the last few days, I just had this experience of not being able to take it in. It's just too much. It's not bad. I'm not saying this is a bad thing. It's probably a great thing. But it is disconcerting because I feel this kind of sensation like, wow, I haven't been interacting with human beings much in the last year, and now suddenly I'm interacting with lots of people. Even yesterday, a complete stranger, had a decent conversation. He was wearing a mask, I wasn't. He freely admitted he wears it because he's been told to, not because he thinks it does anything. But what I've noticed in Roosevelt, Utah so far, and that's where I'm at, Roosevelt, Utah, chances are you might eventually find that out. But what I've noticed about Utah so far is that the people here are just not that obsessed with the COVID thing. That yes, they go through the motions. Yes, employees put on the mask, but there's nobody going around yelling at people because you don't have your mask on. When I went to Costco in Federal Way, Washington, last December, there was a dude who went around the Costco yelling at people because they didn't have their mask on right. I'm not saying they didn't have their mask on. They didn't have it on right. Can you imagine what happens next with vaccine passports and whatever? And you might have to wear two masks instead of one. Can you imagine being the person that goes around Costco, checking to see if a person has their vaccination passport, checking to see if their mask is on right? And what does that do to people? Especially given the simple fact that this pandemic, plandemic, scamdemic is BS. It's crap. What it does is it terrorizes people. What it does is it stresses people out. What it is a death of a thousand cuts over and over and over again. And so I went into my little hole, and I lived there as long as I could. And a few weeks ago, a person reached out to me and said, you know, I like your podcast. Can I help you out? And probably it was a 50-50 thing. I could have taken the chance and, you know, go to Utah, or I could have stayed in Little Saigon and waited to die. Waited around cold people who were waiting to die. Waiting around mad people in Seattle that truly believed they were going to flip houses to get out of this mess. Waiting to die. And so, yeah, in the last few days, I've been around people that are decent people, good people. They have hearts, they have minds, they have emotions. And it's been a bit intense. But they're not doing anything wrong. They're behaving like normal people. But if you come from an abnormal world, the normal can be jarring. That's how I want to end this broadcast today. This podcast, this broadcast, I want to end it on that thought. That if you spent the last year in a city, you know, similar to Seattle, like me, and you found yourself not having the resources to get out, not having the resources to have a backyard, I was living essentially in a couple hundred square feet, and if I went outside, I was surrounded by people that horrified me, that had no faces, faceless people. When I was in college, we studied people who had organic brain damage, and they could not see faces. And what we did, or what was done to us rather, what was done to us in 2020 was a forced, a coerced kind of brain damage, or at least a coerced kind of damage to the way we interact with each other. And it will lead to brain damage, I think, for kids, actually. And I just don't mean low oxygen, folks. There is nothing psychologically correct about what's going on with the mass stuff. It is bad. It is worse than bad. It is terrorizing kids. It is putting kids into a mode of fight or flight all the time. It is ultimately convincing children that they're nothing but property. Think about the aliens, my friends. Think about the people that suddenly go missing, the kids that just disappear. We are creating, in this pandemic, the exact and precise kind of world that every predator wants. A world of faceless, anonymous victims. A world where kids are too afraid to scream. And if they are sad, you can't tell because they have a mask on. That is the world. That's the world that's being created in our name. That is the world that's being manufactured around us. And it's not aliens, my friends. It's not aliens that are doing this to us. It's people. Terribly dark, disastrous, broken souls. Well, I should say soulless people. It isn't aliens that created the PSYOP. It was people. It was our government. It was people with more power than anybody listening to this broadcast. And I don't have words but to say that we struggle on. That we keep pushing forward, I guess. That we don't give up. We can't live in the fear, terror that's essentially been provided to us. We cannot take the meal of dark fear. We have to reject it. It's not easy. And if your way of rejecting it is to do it in the city and you're able to do it, God bless you. I mean it. And if your way of rejecting it is to get out of the cities right now, God bless you. And I understand. And I understand more now than I did a few weeks ago. And I understood then. I understood then, brothers and sisters. So for Dan Sullivan, for the Planetary Status Report, it should be pretty close to midnight Eastern Standard Time, Saturday or Sunday night. But if you're just listening to this off the web, it's a podcast. You can hear it anytime. Time is changing. Stay well out there. Be happy. Beware of your surroundings and embrace reality as it is.